I was just going to mention, in case any of you don't sort of know the background of all this knowledge, it was a small group of men back in the 1920s and 30s who were given divine understanding of God's amazing time patterns through the Bible. It could not have been given before. Daniel was told to seal up his book until the time of the end. We are in these end days of the 6,000 years of man. Truths are still being revealed, which have been hidden from his ecclesia until this past 150 years. So tonight you will hear wonderful things to do with the timing of the death and resurrection of God's beloved Son, the Lord Jesus Christ, never understood or heard of before, though many have tried to understand in the ecclesia at large. Jesus said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And we do desire to know the truth, don't we? So it's the life of Jesus in relation to time, and we're doing the resurrection part one this time. We'll start tonight by looking at what happened as Jesus died and when they buried him. So to begin with, let's go back and look at how Matthew describes it in Matthew 27:51. Then behold, the veil of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom, and the earth quaked, and the rocks were split, and the graves were opened, and many bodies of the saints who had fallen asleep were raised, and coming out of the graves after his resurrection, they went into the holy city and appeared to many. That's all one sentence. So when the centurion and those with him who were guarding Jesus saw the earthquake and the things that had happened, they feared greatly, saying, "Truly, this was the Son of God." And many women who followed Jesus from Galilee, ministering to him, were there looking on from afar, among whom were Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Joses, and the mother of Zebedee's sons. As we saw last time, it seems here as if the death of Jesus and the resurrection were at exactly the same time, doesn't it? We know from this and other scriptures that there was an earthquake as he died, but there was also another earthquake over 2 days later at the resurrection, because it also says there was an earthquake when the stone was rolled away. Unlocking this verse and understanding this is key, and it shows that God completely ignored the 2 whole days that Jesus was in the tomb, which were also the 2 days of the Jews' Sabbath celebrations. I'll explain this in detail later. Going back to the earthquakes, we see Matthew describing the scene at the resurrection in the next chapter in Matthew 28, verse 2. And behold, there was a great earthquake, for an angel of the Lord descended from heaven and came and rolled back the stone from the door and sat on it. But in Matthew 27, the chapter before, it looks as if there is just one earthquake joining together the death of Jesus and the resurrection. It's as if it all happened together. However, there were definitely 2 earthquakes, but there is a gap of time in the verse here. It's like some verses that we study about the church, where there is sometimes a gap between 2 words in a verse, and much can happen there. For the church, there is a 2,000-year gap. Here, the gap is over 2 days, but it is bounded by an earthquake as Jesus died, and then another when he was raised and the grave was opened. Later on tonight, we will look at the 2 days that were the Jews' special days, their 2 special religious Sabbaths, but which Matthew totally ignores, as he never mentions the Jews' Sabbaths at all. Mark, however, notes, like John, that it was the preparation day before their Sabbath, their Passover. He says in Mark 15, verse 42, "Now when evening had come, because it was the preparation day, that is, the day before the Sabbath, Joseph of Arimathea, a prominent council member, who was himself waiting for the kingdom of God, as was Simeon at Jesus' birth, if you remember, coming and taking courage, went in to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. Pilate marveled that he was already dead, and summoning the centurion, he asked him if he had been dead for some time. So when he found out from the centurion, he granted the body to Joseph. Then he brought fine linen, took him down and wrapped him in the linen. And he laid him in a tomb, which had been hewn out of the rock, and rolled a stone against the door of the tomb. And Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of Joseph, observed where he was laid." John 19, verse 41 to 42 says that in the place where Jesus was crucified, there was a garden, and in the garden, a new tomb in which no one had yet been laid. So there they laid Jesus because of the Jews' preparation day, for the tomb was nearby. So these two Marys were at the tomb watching what was going on. We also see that in Luke's description in Luke 23:55. "Now behold, there was a man named Joseph, a council member, a good and just man. He had not consented to their decision and deed. He was from Arimathea, a city of the Jews, who himself also was waiting for the kingdom of God. This man went to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. Then he took it down, wrapped it in linen, and laid it in a tomb that was hewn out of the rock, where no one had ever lain before. That day was the preparation, and the Sabbath drew near. And the women who had come with him from Galilee followed after, and they observed the tomb and how his body was laid. Then they returned and prepared spices and fragrant oils, and they rested on the Sabbath according to the commandment." So both the Marys were there, along with Salome and other faithful women who had been watching what was going on as Jesus died and was buried. These two Marys saw exactly how his body was dressed and laid, and they saw that the stone had been set over it. Now it is rather confusing in Matthew, as he goes back in time without making it very clear how he is recording it all. In Matthew 27, from verses 52 to 56, he describes what happened after that earthquake, which was obviously the second one, and that many other saints were raised with Jesus and appeared to many people. These three verses, 51 to 53, are very remarkable, as you see. They are all one sentence. However, the next verses from Matthew 27, verse 57, go back in time to describe again what Joseph of Arimathea did. Verse 57, "Now when evening had come, there came a rich man from Arimathea named Joseph, who himself had also become a disciple of Jesus. This man went to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. Then Pilate commanded the body to be given to him. When Joseph had taken the body, he wrapped it in a clean linen cloth and laid it in his new tomb, which he had hewn out of the rock. And he rolled a large stone against the door of the tomb and departed. And Mary Magdalene was there, and the other Mary, sitting opposite, or in front of, the tomb." So that's the same instance as in Luke 23, isn't it? Mary Magdalene and the other Mary are opposite the tomb, and they're sitting there looking at it before the stone is rolled in front of it. And Salome was with them, as Mark says in Mark 15, verse 40. There were also women looking on from afar, among whom were Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James the less, and of Joses, and Salome, who also followed him and ministered to him when he was in Galilee, and many other women who came up with him to Jerusalem. It's obvious that there were many women who were all very faithful to Jesus. Now, going on in time for 2.5 days to the Monday morning, Mark 16, verse 1 says, "Now when the Sabbath was past, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome brought spices that they might come and anoint him." And it also says in Matthew 28, verse 1, and this is a key verse, "Now after the Sabbath, as the first day of the weeks or Sabbaths began to dawn, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary came to see the tomb. And behold, there was a great earthquake as an angel of the Lord descended from heaven and came and rolled back the stone from the door and sat on it." So the two Marys and Salome are also both there after the second earthquake on the morning of the resurrection as well. We'll look at verse 1 again later and see exactly where it comes in the timeline because it is very important. However, let's now go back 2 days to the Saturday, the day after Jesus died, which is where Matthew 27:62 takes us. On the next day, which followed the day of preparation, the chief priests and Pharisees gathered together to Pilate, saying, "Sir, we remember, while he was still alive, how that deceiver said, 'After 3 days I will rise.' Therefore, command that the tomb be made secure until the third day, lest his disciples come by night and steal him away and say to the people, 'He has risen from the dead,' so the last deception will be worse than the first." Pilate said to them, "You have a guard, go your way, make it as secure as you know how." So they went and made the tomb secure, sealing the stone and setting the guard. If you remember, we looked at this issue of time and days before, and we saw how Matthew only uses divine time. And he says in verse 62, "On the next day that followed the day of preparation." We saw how extraordinary that was, because if you were talking about a Wednesday, you'd say that the next day was Thursday. You wouldn't say it was the day that followed Wednesday, would you? So this is an extraordinary expression here, but it is because Matthew never, never, never mentions the Jews' Passover. And the next day, which followed the day of preparation, was the Jews' Passover, of course, and this started at 6 o'clock in the evening on the Friday, 3 hours after Jesus died, and about the time that he was put in the tomb. This all happened as their Sabbath, which we would call Saturday, started. And so instead of naming it as the Jews' Passover, Matthew calls it this strange name, the next day which followed the day of preparation. We can also see the irony in the way that Pilate says, "Make it as secure as you know how." Perhaps he said that with a wry smile. We see that they mention this statement about Jesus in verse 63, "How that deceiver said, 'After 3 days I will rise.'" Now let's turn to Matthew 16, verse 21. "From that time, Jesus began to show to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed and be raised the third day." Now, there are three different expressions used in the Bible that relate to the 3 days following Jesus' death. These are statement one, raised on or again the third day. In talking about these 3 days, this is the most common expression in the Bible. The statement raised the third day concerning these 3 days, and we can find it 10 times relating to Jesus. For example, in Matthew 17:22-23, the Son of Man is about to be betrayed into the hands of men, and they will kill him, and the third day he will be raised. I'll give you some other references. Matthew 20, verse 19 is the same. And the third day he will rise again. And in Mark 9:31, for he taught his disciples and said to them, the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of men, and they will kill him. And after he is killed, he will rise the third day. And also Luke 9:21-22. And he strictly warned and commanded them to tell this to no one, saying, the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and be raised the third day. As I said, there are actually 10 scriptures that refer to Jesus being raised on the third day. This is the first way that it is referred to. Now, secondly, we have statement two, after 3 days. Let's turn to Mark 8:31. And he began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and after 3 days rise again. We see that this is the same statement that Matthew uses in the passage we've just read, Matthew 27:63, how that deceiver said, after 3 days I will rise. So here we have two different references to Jesus being raised after 3 days. Then lastly, we have statement three, 3 days and 3 nights. The only other time those similar words are used in relation to Jesus rising is in Matthew 12:39-40. But he answered and said to them, an evil and adulterous generation seeks after a sign, and no sign will be given to it except the sign of the prophet Jonah. For as Jonah was 3 days and 3 nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and 3 nights in the heart of the earth. So there we have a third way that this time is described. We now have 3 days and 3 nights. Now we need to dig deeply into this because, as we know, the Christian world believes, and we've also looked at the scriptures, that Jesus died on a Friday. And just about everyone accepts this. But most people also quite happily then say that he rose on Sunday morning, don't they? It is difficult to see from the scriptures the actual facts because, at first glance, the quotes appear to be rather inconsistent. And many, many Bible students have looked into it over the years. And it does appear to be rather conflicting. There apparently seemed to be nobody who was able to really sort it out. There is obviously a deep truth here, but it does seem on the surface that the statements are rather conflicting, and many, many people have taken it in hand to try and sort it out. Before I go into it all in detail, let's look again at the chart we saw earlier in this series of studies on the life of Jesus, where I showed you that there were at least five calendars running concurrently, during the time of Jesus' life, and that we could deduce a lot by seeing the days and dates in each calendar and how they related to each other, particularly as the feasts unfolded. Here it is on the screen again, and the section we need to focus on is the area coloured near the bottom, which is rather small in this version. Now, to help us see it more clearly, here is a copy zoomed in so we can see it better. Here we can plainly see the time that Jesus was dead. The three blue boxes in the Lord's own calendar column show the 3 days and three nights that we are examining, and the green box in the divine calendar, the calendar of Jehovah, and displays the total time that he was dead, which I will later show you was for a total of 2 days and 9 hours, or 57 hours. Let me now show you a visual representation of these three statements that we find in the Bible. Now, I do hope you will be able to follow this. We are showing you how Joy explained it to help sort it out and find an answer to the whole time question of when Jesus was actually raised. The first expression about the 3 days we saw was, statement one, raised again the third day. So to start with, we're going to look at this expression, raised again the third day, using this first line of green boxes. At the start, we can see that the point of Jesus' death was 3 o'clock, and then after that, at 6 o'clock, his body was put into the tomb. Now, if you have a friend who is going away today but is coming back tomorrow, you would be told that he was coming back in 1 day, and you would say he's coming back tomorrow, wouldn't you? If he was not coming back tomorrow, but instead the day after, then he would be coming back the second day. And if his return was to be the day after that, then you would say he was coming back the third day, wouldn't you? Supposing you take it from the time that Jesus actually died at 3 p.m. on the Friday, then 1 day would take you to 3 p.m. on the Saturday. 2 days would take you to 3 p.m. in the afternoon of the Sunday, and then 3 days would take you to 3 p.m. on the Monday. At the very least, for Jesus to be raised on the third day, it must be sometime from 3 p.m. on the Sunday afternoon and up to 3 p.m. on the Monday. This expression definitely excludes all of the first part of Sunday, and certainly the resurrection could not have been on Sunday morning. So you could not possibly say that he came out of the grave on Sunday morning if he was raised the third day, could you? Now, I think the Roman Catholics and the Orthodox churches actually celebrate it as happening at midnight with their midnight masses, and they celebrate it at the beginning of Sunday. However, this doesn't make any sense at all, as they've got the wrong day. It was impossible for it to be on the Sunday morning, wasn't it? It really was. Now, looking at the green line marked A, raised again the third day, on this chart we can see this represented visually. The statement raised on the third day is in what is known as exclusive time from the death of Jesus at 3 p.m. Friday. Let's see the details of the times on this next slide. Day 1 is 3 p.m. Friday to 3 p.m. Saturday. Day 2 is 3 p.m. Saturday to 3 p.m. Sunday. And day 3 is 3 p.m. Sunday to 3 p.m. Monday. As I said, we would say that this is an exclusive way of reckoning time. Now, on to statement two, after 3 days. Now, if you look at the next way, this is described in scripture, which is after 3 days. We know that Jews do normally count the first day when an event happened as a whole day. For example, if someone died at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, that would be on the first day from then until 6 p.m. That's one day, and they would count that as the whole of day one. Now we put it on the chart in the line of pink blocks like this, because this is in Jewish time with their days starting after 6 p.m. Let's now consider the term after 3 days. If Jesus died at 3 p.m., which is 3 o'clock in the afternoon, that would be during the first day, which is shown as day one. Then after that is day two, followed by day three, all starting and ending at 6 p.m. Even if you were to take them as Gentile days and not Jewish ones, the latest that day three would end would be at midnight. So the earliest time that was actually after 3 days would either be after 6 p.m. on Sunday evening or at midnight as Monday started. So here we see day one is all of Friday. 6 p.m. Thursday to 6 p.m. Friday in Jewish time. Day two is the Sabbath, 6 p.m. Friday to 6 p.m. Saturday, the Jews' Passover. Day three is all of Sunday, 6 p.m. Saturday to 6 p.m. Sunday. We would say that this is an inclusive way of reckoning time. Finally, we have statement three, 3 days and three nights. Jesus said in Matthew 12:40, "For as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth." Now here we record actual days of daylight and nights when it is dark. Days are from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. and nights are obviously from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. the following morning. If you say 3 days and three nights, and Jesus dies at 3 p.m., then the first day in this pattern is the one that ends at 6 p.m., as he was buried. Then we have the first night, and then the second day and the second night. Finally, the third day starts with daylight at 6 a.m. on Sunday morning, and the third night is from 6 p.m. Sunday evening. So the resurrection could be any time from then until 6 a.m. on Monday morning, couldn't it? Let's look in detail. Day one, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Friday. Night one, 6 p.m. Friday to 6 a.m. Saturday. Day two, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday. Night two, 6 p.m. Saturday to 6 a.m. Sunday. Day three, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Sunday. Night three, 6 p.m. Sunday to 6 a.m. Monday. Again, this is an inclusive way of reckoning time. So, this statement restricts the time of the resurrection to the 12 hours of the third night. That is between 6 p.m. Sunday to 6 a.m. on the Monday morning, as the statement is, 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. It doesn't say after the third night. It says 3 days and three nights. With Jews, if it is into part of the night, they would accept that as the whole night. So this is what's called inclusive reckoning. I hope you're still with me. So Jesus is obviously raised during the third night, being dead for the 3 days and three nights. He died during the first day, and then he rose during the third night. There are other factors we could go into that show that Jesus actually rose at midnight, as Sunday became Monday in Gentile or Roman time. The most obvious is, how could Jesus stay in the grave 1 second into his resurrection day? This new day, the Monday, which was now in Gentile time, starting at midnight, was actually the divine first day of the Sabbaths, the first day of the Feast of Weeks up to Pentecost. And it was also the day of first fruits. And Jesus was the chief stalk, the chief head of grain in the sheaf that was to be waved before the Lord that morning. So how was he to stay in death beyond the very first moment of this great day, which speaks of resurrection? However, to complete this slide, we can see at the bottom the actual period that Jesus was in death. And this was for a total of 2 days and 9 hours. The red dotted lines on the chart show how this time relates to the three expressions about the 3 days and the three nights. Now, let's look at this first day of the weeks. Matthew 21:1 says, "Now, after the Sabbath, as the first day of the weeks began to dawn, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary came to see the tomb." And then Mark 16:2, "Very early in the morning, on the first day of the weeks, they came to the tomb when the sun had risen." In Luke 24:1, "Now on the first day of the weeks, very early in the morning, they and certain other women with them came to the tomb, bringing the spices which they had prepared." Now you will be aware that modern translations just about all say the first day of the week, singular, don't they? And that is generally thought to be a Sunday. If the Sabbath is the seventh day, then the first day of the next week is Sunday. The trouble is they haven't translated it as it is. And this is just about in every Bible, every translation, everywhere. The main variance to this is Young in his literal translation, who apparently noticed what it actually says, and that the actual Greek is te mias ton sabbaton, which they translate as the first day of the week. Every time it's used for this day, which is actually six times in the Gospels. Now, the word sabbaton is plural, meaning Sabbaths, and it should be translated as the first of, or the first day of, the Sabbaths, plural. Young's literal translation does do this. Now, the word sabbaton, meaning Sabbaths, here is plural. It is not singular. So you can't say the first day of the week because it's the first day of the weeks or the Sabbaths. So it should be translated as the first day of the Sabbaths, or more accurately, the first of the Sabbaths. Now let's look at Deuteronomy 16:9. "You shall count 7 weeks for yourself. Begin to count the 7 weeks from the time you begin to put the sickle to the grain. Then you shall keep the Feast of Weeks to the Lord your God with the tribute of a freewill offering from your hand. which you shall give as the Lord your God blesses you. On this first of the Sabbaths, the first day of the Feast of Weeks, which was also the day of first fruits, they had to put a sickle to the grain to reap the first sheaf of the harvest. They would do this on the morning of that day, wouldn't they? They wouldn't start reaping a harvest in the evening. They'd start reaping the harvest in the morning. And from the very moment they did that, they then started to count 7 weeks for the Feast of Weeks. Leviticus 23:9, which is about the Feast of First Fruits. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel, and say to them, when you come into the land which I give to you, and reap its harvest, then you shall bring a sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest. He shall wave the sheaf before the Lord, to be accepted on your behalf. On the day after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it." And then it says that you won't partake of the harvest at all until you've done that. And then in verse 15, "And you shall count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath, from the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering, 7 Sabbaths shall be completed. Count 50 days to the day after the 7th Sabbath, then you shall offer a new grain offering to the Lord." Now what it's saying is that there was a day, a Sabbath, and on the day after that Sabbath, you begin to count 7 Sabbaths, which is 7 weeks or 49 days, followed by the 50th day, the day of Pentecost. And we know that after Jesus rose, there were 40 days before he ascended, and then there were 10 more days until Pentecost. So that was a complete time period of 50 days. And it says that you had to start this period from the day after the Sabbath. Now the Sabbath is all to do with the Passover. So it's following the Passover, but it also had to start the day after a weekly Sabbath. Now every year there was an annual Passover, and that might fall on any weekday. It would move and be on a different day of the week each year, but it would always be on the 14th day of Nisan, the first month. But whenever the Passover was, you had then to wait until the next weekly Sabbath, and then, starting on the day after it, you began to count 50 days. However, this year, in AD 33, God had designed the Passover and the first day of unleavened bread to actually be on the weekly Sabbath, so they didn't have to wait extra days that year. Now we saw that Matthew 21:1 says, "Now after the Sabbath, as the first day of the weeks began to dawn." So this verse is saying that Jesus rose on the first day of the Sabbaths, which was also the day after the weekly Sabbath. This is why many think he rose the following day, on the Sunday. Now we know that in the Jewish and also in the Gentile way of reckoning, he actually died on Friday, the 1st of May, AD 33. There's no question or doubt about it. However, the reason for the misunderstanding about days is that when we looked before at the Passover and the crucifixion, we came to realize that God's calendar, the one that Jesus used, was one day ahead of the Jewish one. Remember that. Then, if you remember, he died on God's holy Sabbath and not on the Jews' one that year. So we have discovered that the Jews' Passover was the next day, on their weekly Sabbath, which we call Saturday. And then the following day was Sunday, which would have been their first day of the weeks. However, the verses that we are studying don't say that. God's calendar was one day ahead because of Joshua's long day in Joshua chapter 10. God quietly counted 2 days for those 48 hours of the battle, whereas Joshua and all Israel counted it as one long day. From that point on, God moved his calendar forward by 1 day, so that when Israel began to desecrate the Sabbaths, they weren't doing it on God's holy days. So therefore, in AD 33, Jesus kept the Passover a day before the Jews did. We can see that on this five calendars chart that we saw earlier. Jesus obviously kept the Passover on the correct day for him, the divine Sabbath, whereas the Jews were taking it the next day on their Sabbath. The Sabbath was very important to God, and we have seen that many significant things in Jesus' life all happened on a divine Sabbath, including the day that he was born, and obviously he would also die on God's holy Sabbath. Now, I have said many times that Matthew never mentions the Jews' Sabbath. He only mentions the divine Sabbath. However, John mentions the Jews' Sabbath, and we see that in John 19, verse 14. Now, it was the preparation day of the Passover and about the sixth hour. And then it says lower down in verse 31, therefore, because it was the preparation day that the bodies should not remain on the stake on the Sabbath, for that Sabbath was a high day. So what they're saying is that it was the preparation day for both the Jews' Sabbath and also for their Passover. And so John is talking in Jewish time, because that's what it was. The day Jesus died, a Friday, was the preparation day for their Sabbath and for the Jews' Passover. So John only speaks in Jewish time, but Matthew speaks in divine time, and we'll see that again as we go on. We know everybody who's looked into these things, that is, men of God, have known down the ages that the presentation of the sheaf of the first fruits is in relation to resurrection at the beginning of the harvest. It's a significant type of Jesus in resurrection, and we'll look at that more clearly later. And also that 50 days later, the presentation of the two wave loaves on the day of Pentecost is to do with the church, both Jew and Gentile. These two loaves were baked with leaven, because with the church, it's with leaven. But we'll look at that again later as well. And this is harvest time right now for us. We are in the harvest time of the church today. Then there's going to be a day when we're all going to be presented to the Father, both Jew and Gentile, that will be the great Pentecost in future. Hallelujah. Now, I want to read what happened in relation to this, because something very significant had to happen for Jesus to have died on the Sabbath. And then this next day, to be the first day of the Sabbaths. If he rose on the first day of the Sabbaths, which had to start on the day following the Sabbath, which in his calendar was the day he died, then something had to happen. There seemed to be 2 days missing in the narrative. The chronologers had a problem over this, because this was a mystery. that everybody had been trying to sort out down the ages, and they really were crying out to God and praying about it for a long time. It wasn't just something that happened suddenly. For a long, long time, they prayed about this issue, and eventually they were directed to Daniel 2:21, where it says, "And he changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings and raises up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding." Isn't that wonderful? So it says, he changes the times and the seasons. And verse 22, he reveals deep and secret things. He knows what is the darkness, and light dwells with him. So God is his own interpreter, isn't he? He's a God who reveals the deep and secret things, but he's a God who also can change time. And we get that in two places in Scripture. In the days of Hezekiah, the shadow of the sun went back for 10 steps, which was for 10 hours. And in the days of Joshua, the sun stood still for a whole 24 hours. And we know that the sun and the moon were created for times and seasons. That's why God created them. That's their purpose in the heavens. They are witnesses. Psalm 89, verse 36. His seed shall endure forever, and his throne as the sun before me. It shall be established forever like the moon, even like the faithful witness in the sky. Every calendar down the ages has been based on the sun or the moon, or both put together. If you were a Jew, you went by the lunar calendar. If you were a Gentile, a Babylonian or Roman, you went by the solar calendar. The Romans had a type of lunar calendar before the Julian one started in 45 BC, which was adjusted for the seasons. And the Jews also have their lunar year and adjust it for the seasons. And we know how the Jews do it. They put in an intercalary extra month every 2 or 3 years to bring the seasons back in line. And we've done that in the chronology studies before. However, God changes the times and seasons, and he had changed time in the days of Hezekiah and Joshua. So it began to dawn on these men that perhaps God had performed a change in time here as well. Now, one of these chronologers, Arthur Ware, went out walking and praying in the Lake District many times in the mid-1930s. On the 24th of November, 1935, that is 90 years ago this week, he was walking in the mountains praying about this, and he suddenly felt the Lord draw very near to him as he sought him on this issue. And then the Lord clearly spoke to him, "Do you count time to one who is dead?" And his reply was, "No, Lord." And the reply was, "Neither do we." Isn't that true? There is no time in death. In Job 28:3, it says, "He sets an end to darkness." And then verse 11, "And the thing that is hid brings he forth to the light." So these men realize that as God didn't reckon the 2 whole days whilst Jesus was in the grave, the next day became, in his reckoning, the day after the Sabbath, didn't it? Now, we are going to see that there is a lot more evidence for this, but please just take this for the moment. If God doesn't reckon these days in time, then when he says the first day of the Sabbaths or the first day of the weeks, he's meaning the day after that Sabbath in divine time. And you don't reckon what's in between. You can't reckon it. Not if Jesus is dead in divine time. Now they realized that this didn't include the odd hours, the extra 9 hours, because you've got to have a full day as a day. You can't divide up a day. It's 24 hours. However, they realized that for those 2 whole days, time was not reckoned in the divine calendar. We can see this clearly on the 5-calendar chart again. It says twice in the middle there, day not reckoned, in red writing on a yellow background. Now, those 2 whole days that Jesus was dead were the days of the Jews' Passover, which was the first day of their Feast of Unleavened Bread, and the Jews' first day of the Sabbaths, which was the first day of the 7 weeks up to Pentecost. These were their 2 main festival days side by side. However, God says in Amos 8:10, I will turn your feasts into mourning and all your songs lamentation. They had just crucified their king, their Lord, their Messiah. They had just crucified him. But here they were religiously keeping their Passover, their first day of unleavened bread, and their first day of weeks without acknowledging who they had just killed. It was a travesty of which it all spoke. So, as far as God was concerned, he blotted out those 2 days from his reckoning. The Jews' feasts on those 2 days were cancelled and turned into mourning, as you will also see in the box on the right on this chart. Now, we can see that there are some wonderful types of these 2 days. If you look at the fact that the Christian dispensation has been 2,000 years, which is from the type of 2 days, but in Jewish time, God wanted them to come back to the land after the 2 days for the third day, for the resurrection of Israel, which is what he's doing now. And if you remember from biblical chronology, the 2 days, or 2,000 lunar years of redemption chronology, ended in 1933. And then 1 hour later, which is a type of 15 years, in 1948, 15 years later, the Jews came back to the land and the state of Israel was reborn. So there has been a sort of hiatus in time. The Gentile period, which is basically the church age. And it says in Hosea 6:2, after 2 days, he will revive us. On the third day, he will raise us up. And so it's a type, really, of the Christian dispensation, which was being put in relation to Israel. God doesn't reckon time, those 2 days, in that sense. And so God didn't reckon those 2 full days in the divine calendar during the time that Jesus was in the grave, as the Jews were scattered throughout the world. You see that from Jewish time, okay? Now, very interestingly, when they were studying the chronology of the Bible, they discovered that somewhere the moon, the lunar cycle, had lost 2 complete days. And they couldn't quite make it out how it could possibly have lost those 2 days. But the thing was, it had lost 2 days. And so they began to see that somewhere, somehow, God had done something with the moon in those 2 days. They then realized that the moon had actually stood still and that God actually stayed the moon for 2 whole days. At that time, the moon was a full moon, being Passover and the middle of the month, and it seems that the earth continued to spin and the sun and the moon appeared going down and coming up again every day as usual. However, for those 2 days, the moon would have remained as a full moon in the sky and would not have waned at all. Retaining its position as a full moon, being directly opposite the sun in the sky for those 2 days. This shows us that you don't have to go beyond the Bible to understand astronomy. We know the Bible has it all. In fact, it is the secular that should learn from the Bible and not the other way round. It's all in the Bible. But there is separate astronomical proof about it as well, which is as follows. If you're still with me. In 45 BC, Julius Caesar inaugurated his solar calendar, which he very humbly called the Julian calendar. And he didn't start it as one might have expected on the day that we would now call December the 24th in 46 BC, which was what was thought to have been the day of the winter solstice that year. Now, wouldn't you think that if you were inaugurating a calendar based on the sun, a solar calendar, that you would inaugurate it on the shortest day of the year, just as the days were beginning to get longer? That's what you'd think he would do, as it would confirm that it was his new solar calendar. However, he didn't, because he was waiting for the new moon to appear in the early evening sky a week later. The populace were used to seeing the moon reappear after sunset at the beginning of their month, so they were waiting for the new moon. Now, the whole point of this was that they would actually see the new moon as they always did, as they started the first month at the beginning of this new calendar, which from that point on would be a solar one, and it would no longer coincide with the moon at all, and there were now only going to be 12 slightly longer months in a year, and not the 12 or 13 that they had been used to, as they previously had intercalated like the Jews do. Now, when they looked up on January the 1st, the first day of this new Julian calendar, they could see the new moon. What they saw was a little crescent called the phasis of the moon. But this is not the true new moon, which you can't see at all unless there is a solar eclipse, as this occurs about 2 days before the phasis. Going back in all the published astronomical tables to January the 1st in 45 BC, they show that at 6:16 p.m. that day, it was a true new moon. So it seems on the surface that Julius Caesar was absolutely correct. He started his new calendar at a new moon. However, in reality, this new moon would not have been visible in the sky until the evening of the second day after the actual day of the new moon. So why did Julius Caesar actually start his new calendar on that day? Why did it look as if he started it 2 days before everyone could actually see the moon? If they couldn't see it then, it wouldn't have meant anything to the populace on that day. However, from what we have studied tonight, if we realize that the moon actually stopped still for 2 whole days, 78 years later, when Jesus died in AD 33, then we can see that in actual fact, when Julius Caesar inaugurated his new calendar at the start of the year that we now call 45 BC, then the first day of January that year was 2 days after the true new moon that month, and that actually it was the phasis of the moon that day, and the first slender crescent of the moon would have been seen very clearly in the sky that evening as an amazing sign to all the people of the Roman Empire that this new calendar really had started. So we can now see that he did schedule his Julian calendar to start when he knew that the populace would see the moon reappearing on that first day of January. He wasn't actually doing it by a sign in the sun. He wanted them to see the moon itself actually start the new year of the solar calendar, because that's what they always did. They'd always done it that way. They had always waited for the moon to appear to start their previous years, just like the Jews do now. Now, the historical records show that he was waiting for the new moon. They do say that. But if you look at it carefully, you will see that this doesn't make sense, because no one would actually have been able to see the moon on the day of the true new moon, unless there was a solar eclipse, of course. And we don't believe there was one that month. So there really is astronomical proof that the moon's monthly cycle was 2 days earlier at that time, and that instead the people really did see a sign in the moon that day as Julius Caesar started his calendar. There was also another man who was a great calendar expert, and he gave his almanacs going back into the far distant past, and twice he said that sometimes these calculations will be 2 days in error, and he didn't know why. So we believe from all this that God actually stopped time. He really did change time in relation to his son when Jesus was in the grave, and those 2 days were not counted to one dead. That is enough information for tonight, but next time we will look in detail as to what all this meant, so we can really understand exactly what went on and how we can work out the exact days and times of these stupendous events and prove when Jesus was actually raised from the dead. Amen.